You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network, and I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is 3/16/21. Well, it's the daffodils are coming up in Vancouver. Spring is springing, and therefore we decided to get our good friend Bob Hoy on. Is inflation baked in the cake? Are we going back to the future or back to the 1970s without the use or aid of a DeLorean? That's the question. Is it, as Yogi Berra would say, the famed manager of the New York Yankees and also the catcher, is this deja vu all over again? And someone who knows from deja vu, that's for sure, is our good friend Bob Hoy. And Bob, welcome back. Markets.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the very kind intro. It's very good to be with you and our listeners. And as you know, I became a financial historian many years ago, spent evenings in the library just for a couple of years. And so one thing you get is that there's nothing new in the financial markets, never, ever. But what we're getting lately in by way of new is that the price changes, like in Bitcoin and in the GameStop, have been huge. Just we've had financial violence before, but the price changes are huge. And then also now you have the public in the financial markets, particularly the stocks, particularly speculative stocks, in a manner unseen since the late 60s. I was with a very good regional broker in the late 1960s, heading up their institutional equity desk, and a great firm, and we were doing a lot of new issues, and so, which are now called IPOs. But it was a phenomenal market, and this is what we've had lately. So there's no numbers that one can put on it, Carrie, about the public being in the market, but I would say that this is the greatest public participation since the late 60s. And I think that one, except for maybe 1973, was the greatest since 1929. So what we've got in your intro is the difference between inflation in financial assets and inflation as most people think of it. And most people, and including interventionist economists and central bankers, think of inflation as rising CPI, rising cost of living, rising commodities, all that sort of stuff. But decades ago, I ran into the classical definition of inflation, and it's practical because it says inflation is an inordinate expansion of credit, not prices. So this is where then, when I, of course, became a financial historian, mainly out of curiosity, is that you realize that you get a decade, say, where the hot action is in inflation of the old type of CPI inflation and wages and salaries and commodities and all that sort of stuff, which prevailed during the 1970s. And this, of course, was anticipated by James Dines in the late 1960s when he pointed out that the reckless Fed and the reckless buying of treasuries in order to keep interest rates down would then eventually launch inflation and gold would go up. And of course, he was right. But also that was in the early 70s when I was doing the research. And then you realize that Yeah, in one decade, you can have inflation as everybody understands it. But then another decade, like the 1920s, you can get inflation in financial assets, stocks and bonds. And so this is where example was that you had a huge of the old kind of inflation that peaked in 1920. And then 9 years later, you had the inflation in financial assets. And then you had the crash, and then you had a long contraction. So what my work original was that, hey, that was number five. The first big financial asset bubble was in 1720, and it was preceded by a global peak in commodities in 1711. So you got this 9 years. So this counts out if you take the last commodity high, which wasn't that big, it was really big for gold and silver, 2011, and count out that in the it's now 9 years and 9 months since that peak. And in 1929, from the peak of commodities to the peak in stocks was 9 years, 4 months. So we used that this year would likely see the bubble go straight up and complete, which it seems to be doing. So now this is what's happened is that, of course, the Federal Reserve has been reckless because it's got hopeless theories. And then the street with the change of government to radical socialists and radical at the Treasury and the Fed, the same old, that, of course, they're going to push the envelope and we're going to get a Weimar type of inflation. They call it runaway inflation. They used to call it galloping inflation. And there have been many articles. I gathered a bunch of headlines about it that runaway inflation was coming back. But they haven't done enough research. You cannot have a Weimar type of inflation. That was in Germany in 1922 or 23 when they really had the printing presses and people were going around with wheelbarrows full of currency. Now, after the First World War ended in 1918, Germany had not been a strong financial center with a strong credit market. But they had, and then after the war, they had virtually no credit market. So then they then could go straight to printing. And whereas in the United States now, you have the biggest credit market in the world. And in order to eventually get to printing press, you'd have to destroy the capital the bond markets, which isn't going to happen. And then also even that Weimar inflation in 1922-23 was not sudden or accidental or arrived, you know, as a deus ex machina. It was because the economists and bankers in Germany did turn on the printing presses. So it's just not going to happen in the senior economy with the senior currency. It's impossible. So then let's then conjecture that maybe we could go back to the 1970s type of inflation. And here's where history comes in as a guide, that the pattern has been that you have a good decade of speculation in commodities, which 08, 2011, and then that crashes. Crude oil fell from 147 and down to exceptionally low prices. What was the low there? 27, and then back again and failed. So then the action turns to inflation, as I say, in financial assets. So, and for example, in German 10-year notes, they've gone to almost minus 1% negative nominal. Never happened before. So that is inflation in bond prices. Like, that's the equivalent of gold going to $30,000 for the gold bugs and the inflationists. So again, I'm going to go back to the pattern is a decade of gaming commodities hit, then a decade of gaming financial assets. And in each case, the end of the speculation in financial assets And the contraction that followed forced a long period of intense pressure on prices. You could call it a post-bubble contraction or post-bubble deflation or a post-bubble depression. And whereby, and the other half of this carry is that the senior currency in each of the five previous post-bubble contractions became chronically firm against other currencies. And the reason I found to explain that is that during the boom in financial assets, there is a mania to buy bonds. Yeah. And most of the new issues of bonds are underwritten in the financial center. It used to be London when sterling was the senior currency. Now it's New York with U.S. dollar as the senior currency. So all of that debt, once the party's over, you get hit by the cold shower of having to service that debt, which means that each borrower has got to get his hands on dollars in order to meet interest rate requirements, debt service, and interest and coupons in U.S. dollars. So this has happened before, like in the 1550s, when Thomas Gresham, who was one of the great traders in history, he was advisor to the British Crown, and the money market was then in Antwerp, the equivalent of New York today. And he was, his letters to the government, Elizabeth I, explained that you do not want to owe money from a soft currency into a hard currency, because at that time there were times when sterling was weak relative to the currency in Antwerp, the guilder. So anyways, there's hundreds of years of examples where it's really difficult to service debt from a soft currency to a hard currency. So this is in the literature, and I see it happening here now. For example, earlier in the year, the emerging market bonds, which is a junk bond of all junk bonds, really started to underperform J&K or HYG. So I looked, and then, of course, March the 1st, there was a news story about three lesser countries in trouble. It was Turkey, Brazil, and South Africa, where their central banks had run out of the reserve, which meaning your U.S. dollars. So they were having to tighten up. So what I'm seeing is that when you have the central bank in lesser countries having a liquidity problem, that eventually hits the senior financial center. And this actually, evidence for this one goes back 2,000 years when the Roman writer Cicero pointed out that when there was a financial problem in the eastern provinces, meaning the other end of the Mediterranean, there was a financial disaster there, it would eventually hit the financial center in Rome. So this is then getting set up for a financial problem hitting New York. So what we're interested in now, Kerry, is that, yes, there's been a terrific commodity rally out of the crash and panic that ended in March last year. But whether you look at copper or base metals, lumber was absolutely fantastic, but got up to really overbought. So what we're getting recently is overbought and sequential sells on copper, the base metal index, and also on lumber. We had big technical assesses on that one. And then with just this week, well, yesterday we put out a piece showing the technical excesses in crude oil and in a number of the oil stocks. The oil patch has been very good. And also the mining stocks and Canadian mining stocks have done very well. So, So the big story is that this Now we're going to get the old-fashioned inflation that we all understand, and the dollar is going to go to zero, and commodities are going to go up forever. And if you're a silver bug, silver will outperform everything. If you're a gold bug, gold will outperform everything. Or if you're a copper bug, copper will outperform everything. But when I mentioned earlier that this is in the market, it shows up with our technical measures. See, some of the technical successes we're getting in, say, copper or base metals is as almost as high as in 2008 and 2011. Both of those were cyclical highs. So, Kerry, I think the return of 1970s type of inflation is the story, and I think those that are on board the story haven't done enough historical research to realize exactly where we are in financial history. And as of the last few weeks, when we're getting all these technical excesses on the hot commodities, that gives me pretty good conviction that this is a cyclical peak for both the financial assets and for the commodities that go with it. Because, you know, in 1929, there were firm prices for copper and residential real estate. But in 1929, the party was in financial assets. And yes, we've had strength in residential housing. You've had strength in key commodities. But the big story is still that it's financial assets. So I'll stay with the view that sometime this year, the senior stock indexes will set their high and roll over. And we've got the half, which is the strong speculative side. And what we're now looking for is the rollover.
So you think that gold and silver and everything is going to come down? We're going to have this deflationary crash effectively?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project, with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
That is the intriguing part, because in every one of these great financial bubbles, the real price of gold has gone down. That's deflated by the CPI, because, you know, back decades ago, 100 years ago, when England was the senior currency and it was on a gold standard, there was no change in price, but the purchasing power of gold did change. So here's the pattern, is that with the financial mania, the gold's real price has gone down, and it has been declining since August. And I think it's getting ready for another rally in here, because what happens is, where in a bubble, let's say the price of copper gets in real terms very high as gold is very low. And in post-bubble deflations, the one sector that is predictable to become profitable is the gold sector, because in the post-bubble contractions, gold's real price has gone up. And that reflects upon profitability. And for example, if you go to 1929, in that boom, the gold stocks didn't do so well. And then when the crash came in, they got hammered, and Homestake was then the senior producer, and stock went down to something like 8.5. And then you could have bought it in 1930 and 31 for, let's say, $9. But then you came into the real bear market for the big stocks. And so you go to the end of 1932, when gold was still at $20.67 an ounce, and Homestake's earnings were up about 130%. And the stock was up 130% when at the end of 1932, the New York Stock Exchange was a disaster. So why use 1932? Because, well, the reason is that in March 1933, Roosevelt started experimenting with the price of gold and eventually moved it up to 35. But as I said, in every post-bubble contraction, the real price of gold has gone up. So all he did was reinforce what was going on anyways. So eventually Homestake got up to something like $65. And in those days, gold companies, gold producers paid out everything by way of dividend. So in the mid-1930s, you not only had a gain from $9 to the 60s, but you were getting $4.50 a share dividend each year. So the gold mining business becomes very profitable in a post-bubble contraction. So this is where our research, and we were watching gold's real price, and it came down and for whatever reason set a clearly identified bottom in 2018, and we went long the GDXJ at 25, and then as I said, the gold's real price rose until last August, and then of course in July the sector gold stocks had become highly speculative, and again we're recording technical excesses on our tools. So our advice then in July was to both traders and investors should take some money off the table because it was so good. And then, of course, the gold stocks have been declining since. So we're now looking for a bottom, and technically I'm sure we'll be able to get it as it arrives. But we're also looking for the next increase in gold's real price. So this is where at the low in 2018, the advice was that we're probably on a multi-year bull market for golds and that the gold stocks would outperform the S&P. And from the low in 2018 to last summer's high, the GDXJ was up 2.2 times more than the S&P. So it really worked, Kerry. We had a terrific outperformance. And then expect that on the next rally. So what this is going to do for fund managers, they're going to, even though they may dislike gold stocks, but they're going to notice that on each rally, the outperformance. So then this opens up the sector to a whole lot of people who would not normally buy gold stocks. They're just going to have to be in on the best sectors. So this is where we're looking for, you know, really a lengthy bull market for gold stocks and some terrific speculations and some great discoveries, because there's the advancing real price, and as I say, it improves profitability of mine operations, but it also improves the valuation of reserves in the ground. So it makes exploration a great field. So we're looking forward to that. Now, you mentioned silver. Here's another one that people who are silver bugs should sort of stand back and take a look at history, because when you're in a bull market for gold and silver, silver will always outperform gold. And then what we did is we used the silver-gold ratio, silver above gold. And if you look at the momentum on that one with the weekly RSI, in April 2011, that got up to 90 on the RSI. And we knew that the only time in history that it had been that high was in January 1980. So we pointed that out and said the sector was speculative and highly dangerous and the bear market would likely follow. And then that indeed happened. So where then in the last March panic, that silver-gold ratio went the other way, and the RSI got down to 11. So that was symmetrical, you know, the opposite of when it was at 90 in April 2011. So that then was the financial markets confirming that that long bear market was on that side of it, at least the silver gold ratio was over. So here we are. Here's the sum up, Kerry, is that the financial markets and particularly lower grade bonds are likely to get hit. The hit to the long treasuries has been incredible and probably bottoming. But then you've got junk will likely sell off next. Commodities, you can look for example, in copper, a seasonal low in November. For lumber, you can look for a seasonal low in October. And for crude oil, you can look for a seasonal low in January, February. But after this summer, of course, we'll be emphasizing those seasonal points. So they would be getting out of oil and gas sectors, base metals. They've been base metal mining stocks have been terrific. And we'd be prepared to position for the next rally in gold stocks when it comes along. And I'm quite sure our technicals will get it. So, and with the next advance in the gold sector, gold would likely outperform silver. As a matter of fact, the gold-silver ratio is for at least 300 years has been a guide to what goes on in credit markets, because in a boom, the gold-silver ratio goes down, and in a bust, it goes up. And so that's where in March a year ago in that panic, it got up to 127. And then more recently, it's trying to base around 64. So here's another one we watch. If the gold-silver ratio goes up, it will be signaling that the financial party is ending, and then we're looking for a credit crisis. And then lastly, Kerry, we've got the action in the U.S. dollar, which it, as I said, the senior currency goes up relative to most commodities and most currencies in a post-bubble contraction. So when in December we're looking for a seasonal decline in the DX, it can decline into January. And the low was early January, and it was oversold. So once that was in, we thought, okay, maybe 2 months of building a base, which it has been doing. And then at previous important lows for the DX over the last 25 years, this is what you've had, this pattern of oversold hit, then a few months of building a base, and then when it goes up and through the 20-week exponential moving average, that ends the base building, and that happened last week. So the U.S. dollar's in a pattern that can lead to a rise, and then when I throw that together with the ancient history that the senior currency always goes up in a post-bubble contraction, this is important then to monitor this base in the U.S. dollar. It could take many weeks yet more to really get the base in, but as long as it trades above the 20-week EMA, this is constructive, which it is doing. So we're looking for a rally in the U.S. dollar, technically and historically. And of course, you know what this is going to do to overbought crude oil, overbought lumber, overbought base metals, overbought copper. So, hey, it's going to be interesting.
Uh-huh. So you think all the commodities have peaked and it's going down from here, huh?
Sure. Well, we've got technical excesses on them now from which they would likely roll over. And as I mentioned, you can have a seasonal high for copper in March. You can have another one in July. But then after that, you then look for a seasonal low in November. And then crude oil, it can be seasonally, it can be firm yet for a while. But it's maybe got ahead of itself recently, especially driven by the crazy new administration that wants to cancel wherever it can oil and gas production in the States. So that was helped get the rally going for, West Texas crude, that sort of thing. But maybe a lot of it is in the market. So let's give ourselves a few months for all of this to kind of roll over. And then in July, we want to then get in the frame of mind that, hey, we're going to be looking for seasonal lows for base metals, for lumber, and then also the late seasonal low would be January or February for crude oil. So, and this then we want to remember that in historically, if you're going to have the discovery of a financial crisis, more than likely it'll be discovered in the fall. And all five of the great previous financial bubbles, starting with the first one, the South Sea bubble in 1720, that one made its high in June, speculative high.
Yeah. Go ahead. Now,
each of the great crash at any time of the year, if you have an excess, but the great crashes have all occurred in the fall of the year. I've got that one dated back to 1347 in the city states in Northern Italy, when the main vehicle for investing in was a mortgage type of instrument. And then it became overdone, and then it went into a contraction. And the worst periods for the mortgage market in Northern Italy in that terrible crash was in the fall. So wherever there's evidence, it indicates that if you're going to have a financial disaster, it'll more than likely happen in the fall.
In the fall, is it? But what about the latest trend? We've also got March. The Ides of March, it always seems to be a dangerous time as well, doesn't it?
All I'm looking for in March is that a probable seasonal high for copper, and then it can have another one in July. So it's all integrated together, Kerry. And in my view, this phase of speculative highs here now in so many things seems on a seasonal pattern. And then the other thing is that this year was likely to see the ultimate climax for the whole bubble in financial assets anyways. And it looks like we're getting that as well. Because when you look for a peak in something at a certain time, like this year, the forecast is two things. One, the up, and the speculative excess, which we're getting. So the other half of the forecast is when it rolls over. So then I'm just looking at the probabilities that more than likely this fall, you will be seeing a financial crisis.
This fall,
and there will be a number of items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where's the crisis?
And it'll hit everything.
Everything?
Gold stocks, real estate, most sectors of the stock market. So, because this has been the greatest financial bubble in history.
Really? So October, September, October?
But I think hopefully we have many months of the stock market action confirming that the market is rolling over, and that investors should be selling the rallies as they get very generous for selling. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you've never seen anything quite like this before, huh?
Well, it's all relative, Kerry, because for the participants in those great bubbles, 1929, 1873, 1825, or even back to 1720, for each of those sets of participants, it was the greatest thing in history. And obviously, of course, because you get more players and whatnot on each one. But this one, of course, is very easy to say this has been the greatest financial bubble in all of history. So,
So is energy going to take another rise up before this crisis?
No, I think we're there. As a matter of fact, we published a piece yesterday showing the overbought excesses in, I think it must have been a dozen oil stocks, and that the crude itself was becoming overbought. So, that was a timely one yesterday that we put out, because we can't say how timely it is until it's going to take many weeks or even a few months to determine if that really was a top. Now, the other thing we get in our set of technical tools is we have one called the springboard buy, and it is designed to buy the dips in a steady flat market or a rising market. And we had one, you know, a number of weeks ago on the S&P, springboard buy the dip. And of course, as Ross is my colleague on technicals, and as we were discussing, how do you tell if it's the last springboard buy in a bull market?
Good question.
Well, you can't. You have to wait until this, like in the S&P, out the level where you got the last springboard buy. So that's what we're watching for. So we're watching for opposites to what's going on now.
Right. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, very good then, Kerry.
We got a lot to look forward to. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, let's talk again. I always enjoy talking with you, Kerry. So.
Absolutely. So just tell us where to read your work, where to find you.
Yeah, you can go bobhoy.com or chartsandmarkets.com. Easiest to get to me is just bobhoye.com, and then you can get into all of our various services. Yep.
All right. So, Bob, it's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure going down memory lane with you and hearing about the history of things that you didn't always know about and you always suspected were so. And any questions for Bob, just send them off to us at kl@kerrylutz.com, and we will forward them off. And make sure you sign up for our newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Bob, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again when things start to hit the fan, okay?
That's the deal, Kerry. Look forward to it. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.